the up here that's not a doctor, I just realized.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, wow. Appreciate you having the humble, less educated guys up here. Okay. Last couple of weeks we've looked at, it's just a coincidence, but we looked at Roger Williams 2 weeks ago, who founded the First Baptist Church in America in Providence, Rhode Island. And then last week we looked at part of the story was the, with the beating of Obadiah Holmes, the man that the man that got saved or that became a Baptist after witnessing that beating, Dr. Dunster. And then today I wanted to look at a man who was imprisoned and was with, we mentioned his name, but he was with Obadiah Holmes when he went to Massachusetts and was imprisoned and they were beaten there. His name is John Clark. And John Clark is a very important man and really stands shoulder to shoulder with Roger Williams in our Baptist history, in American Baptist history. I want to talk about him just briefly. But John Clark really was instrumental, and you might have remembered in both stories that mentioned him, he was Roger Williams got that tract of land from the Massasoit Indians, if you remember that part of the story, and that tract of land became Rhode Island, and it was John Clark and Roger Williams that went to the authorities and got the petition to use that as what would become the colony of Rhode Island. And John Clark was born in England, in London, actually, in 1609. He was a very educated man, very brilliant man. He was apprenticed and became a medical doctor. He also was a lawyer and then would become a Baptist preacher. And he would be an ardent advocate of liberty of conscience until his death this week in 1676. He was initially not a Baptist. He was a Puritan, I believe. And he left England because of the persecution from the Church of England. He was a dissenter there in England. He went to Holland, where many of the dissenters moved to. If you remember, many Baptists moved to Holland because there was more freedom there to worship. He moved there to avoid persecution, as I said, and he came in contact with some Baptists there, but he did not join their fellowship at that time. The Baptist historian Armitage tells us that it was a long train of circumstances which indicate that his steps had led in the same path with those of Roger Williams in the main, through Puritanism, love of religious liberty, disgust at the intolerance of Massachusetts, and so into full Baptist position. And so in the 1640s, Clark had moved to America. He originally stayed in, lived in Massachusetts. Because of the persecution there, he left Massachusetts, if you remember, with some families. He went looking for an area that they could, where their biblical beliefs would be tolerated and that they could worship God. And Roger Williams, as I said, had recently been given that tract of land from the great chief Massasoit, who really is a great man and instrumental in many things that we have to be thankful for. If you remember, he and his tribesmen that were at the first Thanksgiving with the pilgrims there. And Williams had negotiated that peace between the Massasoit and the Narragansett Indians, and Chief Massasoit was so thankful to Roger Williams that he gave him that land, which later would become Rhode Island. And at that time, John Clark and Roger Williams were of the same mind and belief, and they secured the land in a charter, as I've already said. And Williams settled in Providence and started the First Baptist Church there, and then Clark settled in Newport and started what would be the Second Baptist Church in America in Newport. And then in 1651, that is when, I'm kind of bring all this together for you, that is when he and Obadiah Holmes and another man went to Massachusetts to minister to one of their former congregation, and they were arrested and imprisoned in 1651. And that was last week's story. So you kind of, I'm trying to give you a feel for what's happening here and how these all have come together. Then later in 1651, Roger Williams and John Clark would go to England, because in the meantime, England is going through a civil war. And what happens in England is that Oliver Cromwell overturns the monarchy for a short time, and Cromwell was very sympathetic to the Baptist cause. He was a believer in religious freedom to a point. He had his personal bodyguards were Baptist preachers or Baptist men, And many in his armies that overturned the monarchy were Baptists. The Baptists were behind and really supported Oliver Cromwell because of his belief in religious freedom, and they felt they would have some toleration and be able to worship God in the way they wanted to worship if Oliver Cromwell came to the throne, which he did for a time. So at that point, Williams and Clark decide to go to England to talk to Oliver Cromwell and ask him to grant a permanent charter. Remember, everybody's a British citizen at this point. No, there are no Americans. We're all British citizens in the 1600s. So we got to go to the king, or the man who is acting as king at this point, and try to get a petition to establish Rhode Island as a what would later be a permanent charter for a colony where they could live and worship God as their consciences dictated. So Clark, probably his greatest accomplishment is him going to England to secure this charter. Well, they thought it'd be very quick. They thought that Cromwell would see them and grant this charter. As it turned out, that is not what happened. Williams came home after about a year. Clark stayed for 12 years trying to get these monarchs to talk to him. Cromwell, his attention was diverted elsewhere. I don't know exactly what happened, but he never did grant the charter. And actually, it wasn't until the new king, Charles II, was restored to the throne that Charles II, the King of England, established this permanent charter in Rhode Island. And this is what the charter declares, and I'll just read it. It's some old English language, but it's interesting to read. It's great history. Our royal will and pleasure is that no person within said colony, Rhode Island, at any time hereafter shall be in any wise molested, punished, disquieted, or called in question for differences of opinion in matters of religion that do not actually disturb the civil peace of said colony, but that all and any persons may, from time to time and at all times hereafter, freely and fully have and enjoy his and their own judgments and consciousness in matters of religious concernments throughout the tract of land hereby mentioned, they behaving themselves peacefully and quietly, not using this liberty to licentiousness or profaneness, not to civil injury or outward disturbance of others, any law, statute, or clause therein contained, usage or custom of this realm to the contrary thereof in any wise notwithstanding. That's a whole lot of English words to say that no one will be molested or punished or arrested for differences of opinion with the Church of England. Now, this is groundbreaking, perhaps one of the first times in world history that there's been this allowed to take place. And, of course, the rest is history. That was 350 years ago. And in the State House in Rhode Island, if you go there, there's a plaque, a memorial for future generations to see. And on it is a sentence from Charles II. And he says, "It is much on their hearts to hold a lively experiment that a most flourishing civil state may stand and best be maintained, and that among our English subjects with full liberty and religious concernments." And praise the Lord, that experiment has lasted 350 years. That is the beginning of religious freedom in America. Of course, America will not be founded for another 120 years. But really a very important moment. And this man, John Clark, who went through much personal pain staying in England for 12 years to get this done, he finally did land it. And John Clark said this, and I'll just close with this. This is something from his works. And he suffered greatly for his beliefs in believing this, but he said, "It is not the will of the Lord that any should have. It's not the will of the Lord that anyone should have dominion over another man's conscience. Conscience is such a sparkling beam from the Father of lights and spirits that cannot be lorded over, commanded, or forced either by men, devils, or angels." And we want to thank the Lord for this great man who we don't know. You know, we don't know his name very well. Historians know his name, of course. It's not a household term necessarily. But I want to thank the Lord for his belief and his work and the great personal loss that he had to withstand to we could have our freedoms today.